Welcome to Ortho Tutorials. My name is Ezekiel Oburu. I am an orthopedic surgeon at Nairobi Spine and Orthopedic Center, and I also teach at the University of Nairobi. Our topic of discussion today is compartment syndrome. This topic is slightly long, but it is a very important topic in orthopedics, so stay tuned. Now, as an introduction, acute compartment syndrome is a condition in which there is increased pressure within an osteofascial compartment, resulting in impaired local circulation. Without prompt treatment, acute compartment syndrome can lead to ischemia and eventual necrosis. It is considered a clinical diagnosis, especially in places where you cannot measure the compartment pressure. Traditionally, a pressure of 30 millimeters of mercury can be used as a threshold to aid in the diagnosis, but normal pressures do not exclude its diagnosis. The best way, though, to measure compartment pressure is to determine the perfusion pressure of a compartment, also known as the compartment delta pressure. It is defined as the difference between the diastolic pressure and the intracompartmental pressure. So the delta pressure equals diastolic pressure minus measured intracompartmental pressure. A value equals or less than 30 is indicative of compartment syndrome. Muscle and nerve ischemia results from acute compartment syndrome when the tissue pressures inside a closed muscle compartment is higher than the perfusion pressure. It usually happens after a traumatic event, most frequently a fracture. When the tissue pressure is higher than the venous pressure and this restricts blood flow, the chain of events that results in acute compartment syndrome starts. Pain and diminished peripheral sensation are caused by nerve irritation and lack of oxygenated blood and waste product accumulation. Let me also mention chronic compartment syndrome, which occurs frequently during physical activity, pain and incapacity that dissipate when the inciting activity has ceased but will return when one resumes, are characteristic of chronic compartment syndrome. Although chronic compartment syndrome has been reported in the forum of some athletes and some races, for example, in motocross, it is frequently found in the anterior compartment of the leg. So what's the epidemiology of compartment syndrome? Well, the incidence is estimated to be 7.3 per 100,000 in males and 0.7 per 100,000 in females, with the majority of cases occurring after trauma, especially tibial shaft fractures. It occurs more commonly in males younger than the age of 35, probably due to a larger relative intercompartmental muscle mass and increased likelihood of being involved in high energy trauma. So, what is the etiology? It occurs in any condition that restricts the intracompartmental space or increases the fluid volume in the intracompartmental space. 75% of cases of acute compartment syndrome are associated with fractures followed by soft tissue injury. Thus, increased fluid content or decreased compartment size can lead to this condition. Increased fluid content can be caused by the following: intensive muscle use, for example, tetany exercises or seizures, everyday exercise activity, burns, envenomation, decreased serum osmolarity, hemorrhage, post-ischemic swelling, drug and alcohol abuse and coma, rhabdomyolysis, gastrocnemius or peroneus muscle tear, ruptured Baker cyst, influenza myositis, autoimmune vasculitis, androgen abuse with muscle hypertrophy, and deep venous thrombosis. The purpose of this list really is not for you to memorize, but to have an idea of what may cause compartment syndrome. Now, iatrogenic causes of compartment syndrome include the following: military anti-shock trousers, tight splints, cast and dressing, lithotomy position, malfunctioning sequential compressive devices, intramuscular, intra-arterial, intercompartmental injection, intraosseous infusions, massive hypertonic IV fluid infusion, pressurized intravenous infusion, attempts at cannulating veins and arteries in the arms of patients with systemic anticoagulants, intraoperative use of pressurized pulsatile irrigation system, the use of a pump for infusion of fluids into the joint during an arthroscopic procedure. So what are the clinical features? Well, it typically presents with rapid progression of symptoms. The earliest objective physical finding is the tense or wood-like feeling of the involved compartment. Pain is generally severe and often out of proportion to the extent of the injury and is worse with passive stretching or extension of the muscles. Other features of early presentation include paresthesia and soft tissue swelling. Initially, peripheral circulation and distal pulses are maintained, but later on, distal pulses become weak or absent. Late presentation is characterized by worsening pain and swelling, muscle weakness due to paralysis, cold peripheries, and pallor or cyanosis. So how do we diagnose compartment syndrome? Well, we've gone through this. Don't forget the clinical aspect of it, and don't forget to measure the delta pressure. However, there are some other investigations which are important. For example, if you suspect a patient has rhabdomyolysis, then you may want to do creatinine phosphokinase levels and renal function test. Then there's imaging. If a patient has suspected fracture, you need to do imaging. And pulse oximetry, which is not diagnostic, but can help identify limb hypoperfusion. So how do you treat compartment syndrome? Well, acute compartment syndrome is an emergency. Less time should be spent confirming the diagnosis, as delayed treatment may result in loss of a limb. Immediate steps should be undertaken. One, you need to do an urgent surgical consultation. You need to provide supplemental oxygen. You need to remove any restrictive cast, dressing, or bandages to relieve the pressure. You need to keep the extremity at the level of the heart to prevent hypoperfusion. You need to prevent hypoperfusion and provide blood pressure support in patients with hypoperfusion. If the intercompartmental pressure is greater or equals to 30, or the delta pressure is less than or equals to 30, then a fasciotomy should be done. But remember, the delta pressure is probably a more accurate way of determining whether or not you need to do a fasciotomy. In patients who do not meet the diagnostic criteria and are at high risk, serial intercompartmental pressure should be done. In patients whose diagnosis has been confirmed, immediate surgical fasciotomy is needed, ideally within 6 hours of injury. If necrosis occurs before fasciotomy is performed, there is a high likelihood of infection, which may require amputation. If infection occurs, debridement is necessary to prevent systemic spread or other complications. So what are the complications? One, muscle and soft tissue necrosis with higher risk of infection, nerve lesions, rhabdomyolysis with potential crush syndrome, malunion, Volkmann ischemic contracture, rebound compartment syndrome, which occurs 6 to 12 hours after initial surgical reperfusion. It is caused by increased capillary permeability and edema, often due to insufficient fasciotomy incisions. What is the prognosis? If fasciotomy is done within 6 hours, recovery is usually 100%, but after 6 hours, residual nerve damage is expected. When fasciotomy is done within 12 hours, only 2/3 of patients have a normal limb function. In delayed cases, the limb may require an amputation. After a fasciotomy is performed and the swelling dissipates, one may need to resort to a skin graft in order to completely cover the wound. Thank you very much for your patience and listening.